Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, March 24th, 2016. Senior SPLA-IO military and police personnel arrive in Juba to prepare for the arrival of former rebel leader Riek Machar.
With the coming of the police, definitely the Joint Integrated Police will be organized to take over the responsibility of the security of Juba Town and the other three towns of South Sudan. We are happy as a government to welcome them in Juba.
And students in Sherikat are kidnapped by a gunman outside their school in Juba.
We told him this school is called Pom's Land, and the guy has us again. Who promised you this land? We said we are just students, so our director is there. If you want to know more about school, you go to him. He started the gun, that if you don't talk well, I will shoot you.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. SPLA-IO police generals arrived in Juba this evening ahead of the expected arrival of their leader, Riek Machar. The officers are part of first units of a joint integrated police force for South Sudan. They are expected to join their counterparts from the government to implement security arrangements for Juba, Bor, and Malakal, as set forth in the August peace agreement. Mungume Debs Rakaringe reports for VOA from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makwe greeted the 22 high-ranking officials from the SPLM-IO today on behalf of the government. Makwai says their arrival shows that the two sides are committed to implementing the peace agreement.
We are happy to receive them today. This marks actually the beginning of the real implementation of the agreement. And with this implementation, with the coming of the police, definitely the Joint Integrated Police will be organized and set up to take over the responsibility of the security of Juba Town and the other three towns of South Sudan.
SPLM-IO spokesman William Ezekiel agrees.
This means that we are serious in the implementation of the peace agreement, and it means a lot to the people of South Sudan. This is the move and the step people have been longing to see for almost 3 months since we arrived.
Ezekiel says he expects more military and police officials from the armed opposition to come to Juba in the coming days.
The first unit of the army will be arriving on Monday from an area called Kaldak to Malakal, and from Malakal directly to Juba. They are 45 in number, the first one to arrive. And then it will be followed until the number of 1,370 get completed.
Ezekiel says he expects Riek Machar to arrive in Juba soon, but did not offer a specific date. The two sides are expected to form the transition government of national unity after Machar's arrival. The fighting, which erupted in December 2013, led to the displacement of at least 2 million people and forced hundreds of thousands to flee neighboring countries as refugees. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rakaringe in Juba.
Still in Juba, the head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, Festus Mohai, told the warring parties today that his patience and that of the international community is wearing out. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has that story from the capital, Juba.
JEMEC, which is tasked with the monitoring full implementation of the peace deal, brought together top representatives of the government led by Information Minister Michael Makwe, the SPLM-IO, representatives of the Troika countries, and other diplomats representing the international community. Mogai says time is running out. Due to the poor quality of this audio, we are voicing over Mogai comments.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me be frank and tell you that the patience of the international community, as is my own, is being tested. While I remain optimistic, as must we all, now is the time to prove that the commitments that have been repeatedly made by the parties are genuine and sincere. The country cannot afford any more delays. I implore you to heed this message.
Mogai expressed the concerns about continued violations of the permanent ceasefire by both government and opposition forces. He also raised the concerns on the deteriorating economic situation in the country, saying urgent steps must be taken by the government to address the crisis. Mogae says the transitional government of national unity must be formed, but says that will not alone solve South Sudan's problems.
Formation of a new government will not in itself be a panacea. The term of the transitional government, which should have begun months ago, is rapidly elapsing. Therefore, once more, I urge the parties to be dedicated in every respect to the task of forming the new government and consider what will be the plan of action for the first months in office.
Former rebel leader and first vice president designate Riek Machar and President Salva Kiir signed the peace deal last August after increasing pressure from the international community. But so far, the two parties have made little progress in implementing the deal. Despite talk of a breakthrough on containment areas, Makwe says little progress has been made on that issue as well.
Up to this moment, the parties are not in agreement in terms of the presence of the SPLM-AIO in Equatoria and Bahr al-Ghazal, and as such, it has directed CITESAM and the JMCC to verify the presence or the absence of the SPLM-AIO in those areas.
Disagreements over the presence of Machar's forces in the two regions so far have remained one of the key challenges derailing implementation of the agreement. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon.
Security officers in Juba say they are searching for unknown gunmen who kidnapped five students from the Promised Land Secondary School in Sherikhat, east of the capital, yesterday. Three students managed to escape while other two are missing and are feared dead. As Philip Tonaleo reports for VOA from Juba, authorities have detained eight suspects.
The three students who escaped say the gunmen pulled them into a car, blindfolded them, beat them, and later threw them into the Nile River and shot at them. 20-year-old Daniel Buer arrived at school about 7 o'clock local time yesterday, 1 hour before lessons began. Buer and four other boys took a walk to the nearby forest to eat ripening mangoes. Buer says the students were on their way back to school when they met an armed man who threatened them.
That guy came and asked us that which school is this. We told him this school is called Promised Land. And the guy asked us again, who promised you this land? We said we are just students. So our director is there. If you want to know more about school, you go to him. He was holding the gun. He started the gun that if you don't talk well, I will shoot you.
Buer says another gunman emerged from the bush with his gun cocked and aimed at the students. He says the two armed men took them to a house in Rajaf, a suburb located about 10 kilometers from Juba city center.
Inside there, they tied our eyes. They put us in the car. They took us to River Nile. They threw us inside there. And then we were swimming. They were shooting us also in the water. And then I escaped. I go under grasses. I hid myself there.
Buer and two other boys were able to swim away and return home in the evening. But two of their colleagues are still missing. One of them is 18-year-old Bolichol. Bol's father, also called Chol Bol, arrived from Bol this morning to learn the news about his son. He says his son was studying in Uganda and only came to South Sudan a few months ago.
For a crisis with Asenade, I want to give to him. And I couldn't move now, if you know.
It is because of this crisis, he says, that I brought my son here. He says I did not know that anything could happen to him. He says he is not comfortable. Chol says he went his son back. A second student still missing is 23-year-old Diu Apat. His cousin, Grangatim, has been camping at the Promised Land Secondary School since yesterday. Every couple of hours, Atim goes to the bank of the River Nile at the spot where the gunmen threw the students into the water. Atim says he is very worried about his cousin.
You know, when someone is thrown into the water, It means two things, whether you are dead or not. Because when you are thrown into the water and someone shoot you in, then your life is in danger. So I'm not feeling good because I don't see my cousin.
School authorities say they inform police and military authorities about the missing students after the three students returned home in the evening. Major Akut commander of Rajab military post, which is located 2 kilometers from the school, says his officers detained more than half a dozen individuals last night to question them about the kidnappings. We detained 8 people, he says, including this boy. He says the individuals detained told them that they ran to the bush after hearing gunshots coming from the riverside. He says they are helping them in investigation. Accord says 4 names of former soldiers who left the army and now stay in Rajab area have been told to authorities as suspect behind the kidnapping. Accord says those former soldiers remain at large. They were not found at their homes in Rajab. He says neighbors have told investigators the same names of the 4 suspects. Accord says he hopes the suspect will be arrested soon. For VOA News, I am Philip Onaleo in Juba.
Local leaders in the new states of Amadi and Terekeka have agreed to reopen a border between Tali and Kadiba following violent clashes between youth from the two communities that left more than a dozen people dead earlier this month. At a one-day peace conference held in Tali County, the leaders agreed to promote peaceful coexistence between their communities. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Juba.
Local leaders say at least 15 people, including a pregnant woman from Mundri in Amadi State and 3 youths from Terekeka State, were killed in clashes between the two groups. They say fighting broke out after a group of armed youth from Terekeka State attacked cattle camps in Amadi State to revenge the disappearance of a cattle trader from Tali in Kediba Payam. Governors of both states organized a one-day peace and reconciliation conference last week. Amadi State Information Minister Victor Mobruk says participants warned elders from both communities to stop inciting violence among youth. Mobruk says leaders from the two communities agreed to work together.
The two communities agreed that there should be the police station should be stationed along the border so that they monitor the movement of the criminals. There should be a market established in the both sides of the border so that to bring peace and harmony among the two communities, and that market should be on a shifty basis.
Ezekiel Malau, executive director of the newly created Tali County, says establishing a police post in the border will improve security in the two states. He praised the organizers for holding the peace conference.
The meeting was successful. Even now, you can see, yesterday there is a movement of the vehicle. All the borders are open. This is one of the resolutions. Now there is a movement of the vehicle from Amadi State to our end and then from here to there. So people now begin to interact.
Malau describes the youth who attacked cattle camps in Amadi State's Kediba Payam as criminals and say authorities are following up on that front.
Nothing again will happen like that because government now have entered and up to now there will be no any problem against like that. But I would like people to come back to their home and then also resume their normal life.
Malau says the two states are working on modalities to compensate the families on both sides who lost loved ones during the clashes. Amadi State is expected to host the second peace conference between the two communities in the coming weeks. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the success of various UN missions across Africa. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
when was the last time you did something that made you feel proud?
I founded my private school called Promise College Secondary School, and I'm proud of it because I want to help my citizens in South Sudan.
That was 2015 December when I took a step because everybody was against journalism, especially in South Sudan. But when I said it is my own belief and my own interest, my own like and my what I love, so why don't I go for it? I shouldn't be listening to what other people say. It should be coming from me. If I want it, I'll have to go for it.
I think a few weeks ago when I finally managed to balance my life socially and professionally, and just get a good work-life, social-life balance.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. In our continuing week-long series on United Nations mission in South Sudan, we look today at the successes and failures of previous UN missions around the world. For example, the mission in Sierra Leone was deemed a success, while missions in Rwanda and Somalia, not so much. As we hear from Ayen Bior, the UN was roundly criticized for ignoring the warning signs of catastrophic issues in both of those countries.
Lise Howard, Georgetown University professor of international relations in Washington, D.C., says Cambodia, Mozambique, El Salvador, and Sierra Leone all hosted successful UN missions. She says their success had to do with the way UN personnel interacted with locals. She says in all these missions, staff members, be it civilian, military, or administrators, all formed a bond with the citizens and attempted to understand their personal experiences.
We saw members of the UN actively seeking out, especially local level leaders, civic leaders, church leaders, and anyone, any place where people had an idea of what kinds of institutions would work in the post-Civil War environment, because each conflict is different. Every civil war is its own thing. And you can never know ahead of time what might work and what might, which institutions might work to rebuild any given country. Its people, the UN's administrators, civilian and military on the ground, had the freedom to interact and talk with people to figure out, both to convey what the UN was there to do, because there's often a lot of misinformation about why the UN is there, and then also to learn about how the UN could help rebuild that country. And so we saw this pattern of adapting, learning, improvising on the ground in all of the successful missions.
Howard says the open dialogue in these countries created a space where UN personnel could learn from the people they were trying to help. Civilians were not just bystanders who blindly accepted donations. Howard says UN personnel worked together with civilians to figure out the best ways to rebuild the country. These countries have not returned to full-scale war, although some have experienced sporadic tensions. Howard says failed missions also have something in common.
And in all of the cases of failure, those mandates and the way the missions dealt with the post-Civil War environment was very top-down. We had a very top-down style of management, you know, being directed from New York or Washington or Paris, as the case may be, rather than allowing the UN to innovate in the field.
Howard says what works for one country may not work for another, so it is impossible for the UN to have a blanket game plan for all of its missions. She points out the Department of Peacekeeping at the UN has changed and expanded in the last few years, but she says the UN should consider shifting its focus to the men and women running those missions on the ground. She says they can come up with new strategies and new ways to solve problems.
Peacekeeping has become so professionalized and kind of standardized, and some people would argue that there's actually a kind of an international peacebuilding culture now that gets in the way of innovation in the field. And that is one concern I have, is that we've professionalized peacekeeping to such an extent that people have become professionals in the UN system and how to navigate the bureaucracy and how to navigate the peacebuilding world more than learning about each individual country and what each individual country might mean and need.
Howard says the UN needs to answer some tough questions. She says the current design of peacekeeping can conflict with the founding principles of the United Nations and could damage its work. She says the UN was designed as an organization that solved problems through the use of diplomacy and principles and disavowed the use of force as a means of achieving goals. She says other actors like the African Union and NATO could be an alternative option for countries that demand military means to attain peace.
Peacekeeping isn't designed to achieve its goals through the use of force, right? Peacekeepers come from dozens of different countries. They don't speak each other's languages. They don't train together, or they train only once they're deployed in the field. Their stuff isn't interoperable. They're not designed to fight wars. So to give them the mandate to fight a war means that the UN is not going to be able to achieve its goals of peace.
Howard says a big part of the problem is the clash between the principles of peacekeeping, stabilization, and counterinsurgencies. She says the UN should seek a more definitive definition of its peacekeepers and their role in the missions they oversee. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The deputy head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the mission is facing many political challenges under Chapter 7. Mustafa Shomari says the enemy's force of 12,000 troops is caught between civilians and many armed groups in South Sudan.
The challenge one is that we find sometimes ourselves in a situation where we are among the civilians. Then really using lethal weapon is you can have some casualties that you do among the people that you are supporting. This is one. Two, it is very important for us. The second challenge is also, as I say, it's not always that we have this, reaction from those who are attacking us, that they are shooting on us directly so that we can react using, you know, the standard operating system that we have. And three, it's clear that we have also the rule of engagement of the troop contributing countries, because we have also to make sure that this is also respected. Because as I say, we don't have a military. Those who are coming to us are coming from countries who are willing to support us and so on. So there are some rules of engagement also that we also need to make sure that we support and we look at.
Peacekeeping and the missions depend on its public diplomacy with the host country, especially the people. How is your relationship with the communities in South Sudan?
I would say really the community, our relations are good, because as I say, we are doing a lot of outreaching toward the population, and this is really important for us. Two, we do what we call, when we say we are establishing a protective environment. This is where we go out patrolling, really to give the population a sense of security so that they can really, be reassured that there is a sense of security and so on. And this is also very well appreciated. And really at the end, our work is to support overall the peace agreement. And today, as you know, really the population of South Sudan really want peace. And they are really looking at the peace agreement as the way now to really get a lasting peace in South Sudan. And we are actually, as you say in our logo, we are our partners for peace. And that's really the last message I would want to leave with you. We are here to be partners to the country, to the population, for a lasting peace in this country.
That's Mustafa Shomari, deputy head of the UN mission in South Sudan. He was speaking to me from Juba. We asked several South Sudanese in Juba how they think the UN mission in South Sudan is doing and how they would rate it on a scale of 1 to 10. Here is what they had to say.
I'll give them 9, because I've seen UNMISS is doing great job in South Sudan by helping the people more, especially in security, and also employing people to work in their places whereby people are able to improve their lives.
I don't know much about UNMISS, but I think they are doing a lot of things. Maybe 5. I know. I'll not tell you the reason. Yeah, I'll give them 5.
I know UNMISS in South Sudan. They started this mandate. So UNMISS has been doing a lot in South Sudan, as per what I have seen. Reaching the time of the crisis, in fact, UNMISS did a lot to rescue the displaced people, to cater for them, to do for them a lot of things all over the South Sudan. I can give them 8 out of 10.
Because they have been done a lot of work, I can give them 8, because they have done their work. That's one. Just appreciate me. I just to give them 8. They've been assisting a lot. As we have been seeing, they've been doing their work.
If I'm to rate the work of UNMISS, the work they have done so far so good, because If it was not them, I think South Sudan would not have reached where it is now. So I can award them four, because currently the situation is still on peace side. The peace is coming, but economic-wise, the situation is going astray.
I can read them at around six, and they have done a lot to refugees then, ball, what and Benchu, helping them and this peace unit among the Liak Machar and the president. They're also doing well. Accordingly, I can award them six.
Well, if I'm to look at this, I can only give them five. Why? Because they are not doing enough. If you go to the UNMISS right now, you look at the people in there, their life is not that quite well. Currently, I heard there was a little bit of a crisis, like a fight. So I just give them that five.
I think they're helping people, like other people who are staying with them in UNMISS. So according to me, if I could give them marks, I can give them like 100% marks, because they are doing the right thing.
I will give 5 out of 10. Yeah, because actually the coverage is not enough. Why UNMISS is not keen to prevent people not to fight inside their fence? They are not doing enough protection. So I'll give them 5.
Pertaining the work of the UNMISS, I would rate them at 7, basing on the help that they provide to the local community. And especially, we still believe that if they are not there, there are many people who will not be there. At least 7 have done much. Yeah, that's according to me.
These are some South Sudanese talking about how they view the role of the UN mission in South Sudan. We'll have more on the role of UN mission in South Sudan and what it has accomplished in our tomorrow's show. That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Reconciliation by Kebas.
Yeah, the homeboy Kebas and Leviticus Levi.
Reconciliation.
You already know we're talking about reconciliation. Yeah, that's all we need. That's all we're praying for. Levi, tell him, say.
Let's see that beat.
Jeron bitau humba godu sawakuli yom the kebas who levy friendship down bigger tala go we the berenga the sharwai who osli go we lakini yomi na yam shitan daka to ras bitam gada bukuat la handi nobody has no bad to call a friend.
Forgiveness what I'm preaching,
I have a strong desire burning like a fire. Let us take time making we can take it higher. This is a generation to change the nation through peace and reconciliation.
Umondikeli manina masakin, lakini na mistakal sedi. Umondikeli manina deifi, lakini na inu imam. Reconcileso, ya uni na deru. Reconcileso, all that we need. Umondikeli manina masakin, lakini na mistakal sedi. Umondikeli manina deifi, lakini na inu imam.
Mabzol taban, mabzol dey. Piki dam tala, mabzol meskin, mabzol ganyan. Piki dam tala una, mabzol taban, mabzol dey. Piki dam tala, mabzol meskin, mabzol ganyani. Piki dam tala una. Let's work as family, me and you, you and him. Let's try to meet a different, to be as family, to live as one nation. There is nothing we can change if we don't love each other.
We have been listening to Kebas with the song Reconciliation. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Reconcile so.